Hello, I'll say a couple of words in Georgian first and then come back to English. Ინგლისურენოვანი ვერსია პოდკასტისა ზუსტად იდენტური თითქმის მოკლედ ქართულად დევს, შეგიძლიათ იმას მოусმინოთ თუ ინგლისური არიცით. ეს არის მათთვის, ვისაც უნდა რომ ინტერვიუს ინგლისურად მოусმინოს და თან რა შესაძლოა ინგლისურად გაუკეთებ. If you come here after searching for Patti Smith interview on podcast, I will say a couple of words of what you're listening to. This is a Georgian language podcast. I think this is the only one that I'm doing in English because I did an interview with a legendary Patti Smith and I decided to offer an interview in English to those Georgian listeners who also speak English. So this is the best Georgian speaking podcast ever and probably the best podcast ever. So you're missing out on the rest of it, but you know, life is hard. Anyway, Patti Smith came to Georgia to open the photo festival, Tbilisi 14th annual photo festival, and she came with Soundwork Collective. They have a joint project called Correspondences. The leader is Stefan Krasnensky, and the idea of the project is that they're recording sounds in different important spaces where, like their site says, there's a sonic footprint of poets and film directors and climate change. And then Patti Smith reads poetry or texts over it, and it has the visual side as well, and everybody who attended it liked it very much. And we met the second day after the performance in a Rooms Hotel, and thanks to Tamara from Rooms Hotel for helping us, and others from the communication team. We had contacts with Tamara, and there was a huge line of young people while we were recording the interview. They were waiting for 6 o'clock because at 6 o'clock the book signing would start. So we had maybe about 15-20 minutes to talk, and I tried to make the most of it. And I started talking by telling my own story, like I told her, because I was also starstruck. And it was 1996 when I first heard her album Gone Again. That's when I was actively listening to music, and that's when the album came out. And I haven't heard of Horses. Like, I knew her name, but there's so much music you can hear when you're 17 or 18. And my impression was that this is quite a dark album, because it was a hard time for Patti Smith. Her husband, friend Sonic Smith, died recently when this album came out. I think her brother died as well. And one song, About a Boy, is about the death of Kurt Cobain. But it's also not a very morbid album. It's very hopeful. And that's what I said, and then this is what she answered.
I want to magnify the joy as well as the sorrow. I want to, in some way infuse a song when I've lost someone that gives something of how important they are, how important they were to me, but how beautiful it was to know them. And, I'm not really that interested in writing songs so dark that they give no moment of respite or hope to people, because we need that always. In no matter what period of our life, hope is so important. So.
Because the sky might be falling, but you still feel
yeah, the sky way. Might be falling, but you could say, the sky is falling, but it looks so beautiful.
And I think it's so important, I wouldn't say just today, but with all the negative news coming our way, whether it's Ukraine or Middle East or Iran or America, or just the list goes on and on, and it's so easy to become cynical and lose hope, and part of what you do is instill some hope. But where is it coming from? Like, how do you maintain this?
I was very sickly as a child. My life was saved a couple of times from very bad illnesses, and I'm just happy to be alive. I've lost so many friends, my brother, my husband, my parents are gone. Even my little cat, who is 22 years old, died a couple months ago. I've lost so many people I love, but I'm I feel privileged to be alive. And no matter how much despair I feel, I also know that there are people who have things so much worse than I do. Like, I feel brokenhearted about the conditions, say, in the Gaza Strip. I think I'm drinking water, and right now I'm drinking water and thinking there are so many people tonight who have no water. No water for their children, no water. I go to eat and I think all these people, and maybe it could be Somalia, that are starving. And my mind is constantly equating good things with other people's sorrow and other people's strife. But what that teaches me constantly is gratitude. I'm grateful that I have this water. And so I try to keep both things intact, an awareness that other people are suffering, and gratitude when I'm prospering. So otherwise I would just be sad or just despondent all the time. And I can't, because I have children, I have people that count on me, I have my work is a calling, and so I have many, many things to be grateful for.
You mentioned your work, and you have said several times how important the perspiration aspect of creation is. So it's not just the calling that comes to you. You have to actually sit down and work for it. And you have been successful in so many different fields, from poetry to music to photography to everything else. What gives you the drive to work? Because, like, you've done so much for so long.
I just love to work. It's for me, and the daily practice of working, it's to me, it's like bread. I can't imagine life without it. And for a long time, I've been alone. I've been a widow since 1995, and with children. And a large part of what I do every day is devoted to work. And of course, I have friends and I have my family, but my work is one of my greatest friends. I've been, it's the articulation of imagination, one's visions, the things that one wants to share with other people. And it's been a part of my life now for, say, since I was 12, really, which is 65 years of working every day, if I can. It also keeps you young. If you work every day, it will keep you young.
It also struck me in one of the interviews you mentioned, you were describing the period when you were not that active artistically, and you said that you found joy in doing little things like sewing buttons on your husband's shirt, or maybe cooking a goose, or it was somewhere else.
Yes, that's true.
And it was so inspiring, because from somebody who is so artistic as you yourself, and just being in the high art circles all your life, and still you find art in little things.
Well, accomplishment or a sense of... even in those days, the 16 years that I was not in public life, I was studying every day. I woke up early and I wrote every day. I had a daily practice. I had at least a couple hours when everyone was sleeping that were mine. And I did. I did find joy in the small things, in gathering. We had a pear tree. For me, who lived in New York for years, to have a pear tree and have, pears that fell into my hands, hanging my laundry up on the line, and the sun dries it, and it's accomplishment, small accomplishments. Also, it connected me with my mother, and it made me realize, I had two children, my mother had four, plus she was a waitress, she had a hard life, and yet she always had an optimistic energy, And it connected me with her. When I would hang the clothes out to dry, I would think of hanging the clothes out to dry with my mother, and her happiness when the sun would make everything, the towels and sheets look white, and it's a beautiful connection, very simple but direct. And I also think that, again, it's all part of life. I study and work every day. I'm not the greatest housekeeper. I'm not. I do the best I can. But there's some things that I liked very much, and some things. And I wasn't a very good button sewer, but I did it. Okay, it doesn't look great, but the button is staying on, so I accomplished that today.
Well, you've been much accomplished in other fields as well,
yes.
So button sewing is. What's your relation to your age? This is something that, like, I'm 44, and people my age, me and my wife often talk about how we should feel grown up, but we don't. Do you ever feel that?
No, I've never felt. I was the oldest of four children. I always was responsible for the younger children. I embrace responsibility. I understand it, but that doesn't make me a grown-up. I'll never grow up. I think that, if one has an active imagination, enthusiasm, never loses that language of enthusiasm, they don't have to worry about growing up.
Yes, I'm so glad to hear it, because for me you were the embodiment of youth.
No, I'd be 77. I haven't grown up yet. I used to think when I was young, I thought, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to, be like Maria Callas or Ava Gardner and wear black dresses and, white gloves or something. But it never happened. I'm just the same old person.
Do you think about your appearance? Because you were talking in this book that about the importance of contradictions. And it seems that you're a style icon at the same time, but at the same time you don't pay much attention to it. It just happens naturally,
well,
right?
I just have sort of a uniform. I mean, I like fashion, really. I've always loved fashion. I like to look at fashion magazines and see what people are wearing. Incidentally, the people of Georgia have a great sense of style. The young people are awesome. They just, I just love the way they dress. They remind me of myself in the early 70s, and they're just so cool. But I have a certain sense of myself, but I'm not afraid of things. I'm not worried. I like to look presentable in a way that makes me happy, but I'm not worried about aging or the aging process. I would never do anything to myself to make me, appear younger. I mean, I feel like we earn the scars of age. I liked having black hair. Now I have silver hair. But this is, the gift of age, so I just say, okay, fine. But I think I'm more interested in my interior world.
Your art from the 70s, 80s, it can be said that it represented a certain scene, certain culture, the New York scene, but it resonates worldwide because we're here and there are dozens of young people, not even 20 or 21, wanting you to sign their books or take a look at you. And so for me, this is the weird part of art.
I've never really thought of myself as a New York artist. I'm not from New York. I was from a rural town in South Jersey. I came to New York. I flourished in New York and started my band there and CBGBs, and we certainly went through an interesting scene. But then I started traveling, and I've always thought of myself more of a global person, interested in young people all over the world. And I always told them, even in the 70s, when they'd say, oh, we don't have, you're lucky, you're from New York, you have CBGBs. And I'd say, CBGBs is only a state of mind. It's just a shitty club. You can find some place, make it your own, and it's all about the people and about the work. Do your own work, do your own thing. And because I came out of nowhere. I wasn't that skilled. No one knew me or anything. I worked in a bookstore, and I would tell them, you can do that too. You can form a band and you can express yourself artistically, politically, and, you know, because rock and roll is the people's art, you know. It's meant for the people. So I always encouraged young people to, you know, not to be afraid to pick up an electric guitar.
And it's also about connections, right? Because when I was reading your book, I had the impression that, of course, you and Robert both were extremely gifted, but if you haven't met at the same time that you did, I just want to say that you probably influenced each other and helped each other and supported, and that's why you two became.
Well, I think that, right? Robert, how we both had a unique perspective and a aesthetic point of view, not always similar, but what we did for one another was we believed in one another. We met when we were 20. We were both sort of outsiders, a little awkward, you know, and, you know, no one ever heard of us. And he really believed in me, and I believed in him. And that belief, you know, we respected one another. It wasn't just romantic. Yes, we were romantic when we were young. It was it was beautiful. But even more important, we respected each other's intelligence and the work that each other was doing and encouraged each other to work. And even when we broke up as boyfriend and girlfriend, we never lost that. And I still feel it. The confidence that Robert helped me build, I still feel it. And it's a gift he gave me that I will have my whole life. And I'm sure that I gave him something as well. So, you know, that's one thing that, you know, in early relationships that are important, if there's any way you can salvage the best part of them, I mean, because, you know, sometimes, sadly, romance, physical attraction, these things might fall away. But Robert and I had a much deeper connection. And even though it was difficult and a little sad, we worked very hard to preserve it, and we did.
And you two also, in a different way, represent something that for me is fleeting now, meaning that you make art in a high sense of the word, but it is also accessible. So it's not just for popular entertainment, but it is entertaining, and it is something that a layman like myself can understand and cherish. And often art becomes just for connoisseurs, for some people who have studied it. And
well, I mean, I think that for myself, I always aspire to do something on a higher plane, whether it's writing or in poetry. I always aspire to write songs that are, you know, articulate a certain viewpoint or a poetic viewpoint. But I feel, I know that I do some work that's not for everybody. Some of my poetry, maybe some of my photographs, maybe they're esoteric or they're obscure. But when I'm making records or when I'm performing, even when we're on a very high level, even working with Soundwalk, which is a very high level, we still try to find a way to, you know, be accessible to the people at a performance, find a way, because we're trying to impart important information about the climate, about immigration, about war, all of these things, art, the process of art, all of these things have many levels. So with Stefan, Soundwalk, we're able to tap many levels. And so whether you're a philosopher or a scientist or a climate activist or an artist or a high school kid, hopefully there's some door that will open for you. And certainly when I write songs, I write them for the people. I often will write a poem that I think only I will understand. But when I'm writing a song, I'm trying to open the door for the people.
Like with yesterday's performance, and you've been doing this for more than 10 years now, does the message come first?
So you have something to say, and then, or you have the sounds and the soundscapes, and then images. I know that sounds come first, and then you put images on it. But
we don't really break things down that way. It's all organic. The way Stefan and I work, it's so many different ways. We could be having coffee and start talking about Joseph Beuys, and we keep talking and talking, and before we're done our coffee, we have a whole idea of what we want to do, a piece that has to do with the preservation of our species, with the process of art, just sitting at a table. But other things could be, Stefan has gone somewhere, he went to Ethiopia, he got sounds and music and Sufi singers that embodied some of the work of Rimbaud, and I read over it. So sometimes we do things separately, sometimes we come up with something together and just start from the scratch. Other times he inspires me he could be bringing me rocks from a glacier or, you know, things from a sacred cave, and it might inspire some ideas. But, we don't limit ourselves. We don't limit ourselves, whether it's from the obscure to the accessible, or from the highest mountain that he's going to climb, or from the deepest place I can go to channel certain spiritual things, or, you know, whatever I can channel. You know, go as deep in the mind and climb the highest mountain. We'll do whatever we can to bring something new and hopefully inspiring to the people.
My last question is that you've inspired everybody from Madonna to Courtney Love to Michael Stipe, and Bob Dylan helped you on your first tour. And I have just two questions. One is, how do you stay humble in the presence of yourself? Because like you know everybody who has ever done anything. And two, do you ever get starstruck yourself, or for you these are just, you know, this is Bono, this is Bob Dylan, this is Bruce Springsteen, we're just pals?
I get starstruck by people like that you wouldn't even believe. Like, you know, it could be a mathematician that won the Fields Medal, or a movie star, or, you know, I'm a human being. Sometimes I get very excited to meet people, but I'm interested in work. You know, I like meeting all of these people, and it's nice when people say that they've been inspired by you. But in the end, it doesn't make me feel any different about myself. What makes me feel good about myself is doing good work, is maybe doing a good deed, being a good mother. It doesn't matter to me whether, you know, I have accolades or, you know, medals or meet famous people. All that is interesting and even exciting, but nothing more exciting than to write one perfect sentence.